This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Yes, it is. Let's roll. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. On Twitter, it's at Chris Carlin. On Instagram, that guy Carlin. We get to the phones in very short order as we have a lightning round. The next hour until the Don Show. It's a little Don LaGreca extended Islander pregame for game five of the Isles in the Tampa Bay Lightning. In this hour, we will get into whatever you like, but primarily to begin with, we'll start with the Yankees, and we will also discuss the Nets and how their fortunes affect the Knicks. But we start with the Yankees, and been thinking about this a lot over the course of the last week or so when we heard from Brian Cashman, what was it, last Monday at this point? And you felt like the Yankees, after that time of him coming out and speaking last Tuesday, and since they've won the five of the last six, maybe they're starting to get it together. Maybe you're starting to believe in what's going on, and maybe they're starting to figure it out just a little bit. And here we are on the backside of that six-game stretch, and everybody's feeling good. Everybody's feeling like it's starting to come together. And now you've got opportunities. You've got the Red Sox next weekend, a chance to make up some ground with a trip to Boston. You've got the Kansas City Royals in town. You've got chances now before the All-Star break to close a four-game gap and put yourself back right in position to put what's happened in the first half of the season behind you and then start playing like everybody expects you to play. Here's my problem. I'm wondering exactly how Cashman and the Yankees are looking at this as time starts to whittle away. And when I say that, I mean the time between now and July the 31st. So we're more than a month away from that. We're 40 days away from July 31st, the trade deadline for the Yankees. And I've been thinking a lot about patience and how teams are supposed to be patient in evaluating what they have before the deadline and trying to fix it as a result. Well, I think the Yankees were pretty spot on in their evaluation last week about where they were. And I'm just hoping that that's not going to get lost. What do I mean? Well, we heard Brian Cashman come out last week and say, we're not going to just sit here and let it happen. We're going to shake up the roster if that's what we need to do. Well, when you win five of the last six, you might think, that's not what we need to do. Okay. These guys who are in that locker room can get it done, as he said. But also indicated, they're not going to be shy about changing it up. And that's what I get a little bit concerned about, is that each time we run into these win streaks, it seems to be some fool's gold. It seems to be a team that is starting to believe that they're getting things right and that all is going to be fine. And then what happens? Inevitably, you go into a stretch where you drop 7 of 9. And you once again look like an average team and you find yourself back near the 500 mark. All of that just leads me to believe that you still need to be very proactive right now in terms of how you're going to handle getting this team better. You can't be fooled. And that's the word, fooled by what we're seeing right now. They're playing better. They've beaten up on teams over the last week, the Blue Jays, who have had a good season, but I don't think any one of us believes for a minute that the Yankees, in terms of their roster, doesn't have a better team than Toronto. And the A's, who, as Michael told us the other day, they have compiled their record this season against bad teams. They have an incredibly impressive record against teams under 500 and a not so impressive record against teams over 500. So That just leads me to this. I don't believe in what's going on, and it's going to take a while for that to happen. And when Brian Cashman says we're constantly looking at how to get better, he's not necessarily the one I'm worried about. It's Hal above him. And I've said before, I don't blame Hal for not wanting to go above $210 million with the payroll tax, hoping to reset it for next year. Because that's what it's about. You don't want it to be at a full 50% tax for next season. It's not what you're looking for. And I understand that. But for Hal, there may only be one way to really fix this. And that's to throw a little bit more money at the problem. I'm not telling you that the Yankees need to go out and make a major shakeup. But when I talk about fool's gold, are you believing in Gary Sanchez right now starting to get it back? And all of a sudden he's figured it out? Do you want to put stock in this being what Gary Sanchez is as opposed to, I don't know, the last 2.5 years? I don't know that I want to believe in that. In fact, I know I don't. So if there's a chance to get better, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hope that somebody else maybe thinks that Gary Sanchez is worth the investment, because a year and a half from now, he's a free agent, and there's no way you should be discussing re-signing him at all. But this is just an example. Looking at the whole picture, when you have a roster that is so flawed and you realize that, as Cashman seemingly has, even though he says we have the guys to get it done in one breath and in the other says we will shake it up if we need to, you need to. Don't be fooled by how well the team's playing over a week when the history says what it is. And don't be fooled about what a player's doing over that two-week stretch when history says what it is. Vamanos, muchachos. Get on board right now. First up, though, the Islanders are home for the semifinal round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you have the chance to score tickets to Game 6 Wednesday night. Visit NewYorkIslanders.com/ESPN to fill out an entry form and get ready to bring the noise to cheer on the Islanders. All entries must be received by noon tomorrow, so you must enter soon. Again, visit NewYorkIslanders.com/ESPN for your chance to win. Sweet Chuck in Rumson, New Jersey starts us off tonight on Carlin, 98.7 ESPN Radio. What's up, Chuck?
Chris, what is up? Hope all's good.
All so good, brother.
I was on your show a few months ago after the Yankees started off 5-10. And I told you I had a bet with my father that, you know, they'd win 20 out of the next 30. They did it. They ended up winning 23-9. So I did the same bet before the Blue Jays. They're 5-1, so I'm feeling lucky about that. And I do believe in the team. They're very, very streaky. But what I was calling about as well is I want your thoughts on maybe how do the Yankees acquire a Kyle Schwarber or an Anthony Rizzo, two left-handed power bats in the NL. What could the Yankees do to get one of those guys, or maybe both of them, for this stretch if Cashman's really looking to make some moves? What do you think?
Well, first of all, are the Nats willing to part on Schwarber yet? And the Cubs are very much in it. I mean, the Cubs right now are tied for first place. So I don't know that they're giving up on
it. No?
Huh?
I think they're both trying to sell the Nationals and the Cubs.
Well, there's been discussions about it. The Cubs are 8 games over 500. So, you know, as far as Rizzo's concerned, he has been somebody who has been mentioned, but he's having a decent season so far. Not great, decent. Schwarber obviously lit up the Mets over the weekend, as we know. Schwarber's a guy I don't think the Yankees need. And the problem with Rizzo is...
Play infield and outfield?
Schwarber?
Yeah, doesn't he play third and left? And doesn't, like, it doesn't Rizzo, I mean, I think he could play the outfield as well. So you have Voit and Rizzo to deal with. You know, you have the DH problem with Stanton.
Yeah, they're both guys.
I don't know. Thank you for the call. Thanks for taking my call. Like, I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, no problem, great day, Chuck. Man. Thanks for the call. I wouldn't bring in Kyle Schwarber because that's another guy who doesn't necessarily play any position really great by any stretch. I mean, that doesn't seem to make much sense to me right now because, listen, I know what he has done at the plate this season, okay? The guy's hit a ton of home runs. I think he's got 16 or 17. And I know the short porch, and I know all of that. He's a guy that the Yankees have always been in love with. So from that standpoint, you're not necessarily wrong. My problem is I want to find somebody that is not just another DH in waiting. And while I have Voit, Rizzo's not going to come here to play the outfield. That's not going to happen. Marvin in the Bronx is next. Marvin, what's going on?
Look, CC, the whole problem here, and Brian Cashman, I got a lot of faith in Brian, is that they should have never got rid of Didi. He solidified the infield. He has a left-handed bat and a stadium built for left-handed hitting. And he was a clutch player, and he was just a great guy in the locker room. That was a mistake. The Yankees won't admit it, but it's glaring when you look at their lineup and you look at their defensive configuration. I love Gleyber Torres, but he should be at second base, not at shortstop.
Yeah, listen, I there's no doubt that Gleyber Torres should be playing second base. And there's no doubt that they made the mistake with Didi Gregorius. The problem is we're so far removed from that now that nothing is, you know, we can't really do anything about that. If you want to get somebody who can actually play shortstop exceptionally well and put Torres back at his normal spot, well, then what are you doing with LeMahieu at that point? Because Voit's back.
I understand that. And, big guy, you mind if I pivot for a minute?
Go ahead.
You know, what I saw yesterday in the NBA seventh game with Ben Simmons was one of the most despicable displays of lack of guts in a clutch situation. How do you have a dunk and you pass it off?
He was afraid to get
You're
fouled.
You're paying, man, that kind of money in the NBA?
He was afraid to get fouled. And it was, and I'm not defending it. I'm just telling you what happened. It was wrong. And Ben Simmons is, Marvin, I have a history there because I was down in Philly when they, the first year he was in the league. And I have just felt all along, even the year that he didn't play his very first year, I just felt all along that Simmons was overrated, and this has bothered me from day one, that you don't want to go and attack what your weaknesses are. That's not what a great player does.
Let me tell you something, just to throw a little history. John Havlicek came in the league. Bob Cousy said he didn't have a touch. He worked so hard that he's now listed as one of the all-time great scorers in the history of the NBA. So it's work ethic sometimes.
Yeah, and listen, I don't even know that it's work ethic. I don't doubt that he's a hard worker, thanks to the call. I just don't think that he wants to work at things that he's not good at because I don't think he is willing to look bad while trying to get better at something. I think he's afraid to look bad. And that's absurd. You know, that drives me absolutely nuts. I have not been a fan since day one. Since day one. And he's, if that team is going to have any luck, he has got to go. Scott in Long Island is next, 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Scott.
How you doing? I think Ben Simmons should stay in Philly and bring C.J. McCollum in as well and have them to work together. What do you think?
I don't think that. I think the Sixers clearly need a shooter. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I think that Ben Simmons has worn out his welcome in the town. I honestly do. And here's one thing that people, and I explained this earlier today on Bart and Hahn, that I think people don't understand about Philadelphia. It's a town where they will defend their own for a long time. They will protect their own for a long time. And they did that with Simmons.
I have another question also.
Hang on. Let me finish. They did that with Simmons and they did that with Wentz. And with that being the case, they ran out of patience after 5 years because it just wasn't working. And for me, I think Ben Simmons is done there. What's your other question?
My other question is, would he be a good fit for the Knicks if he goes away from
Philly? Stop the call. Stop the call. Cut him off. Get that. Get away. We don't even want to talk about that. No. 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 Oh, my God, no. No. If that happened in Philly, and as I just described it, they protect you for a while. You're one of them. How do you think that's going to go here? 10 games in, you will be sick of him not shooting. It will not take long. He should be nowhere near this place. Andrew in New Jersey. Andrew, what's going on?
If that happened in Philly, as I just described it.
Hi, that's me 10 seconds ago, Andrew. How about turning the radio down?
Yeah, I got it. Sorry about that. I just wanted to say, I don't feel like Ben Simmons was scared to take that dunk because, you know, you get 2 points with the dunk and then you miss at the line. I just think he's trying to look for the better play. I'm not trying to defend his shooting because obviously
the better play. What is the better play when you are standing under the rim alone? How is the better play to pass the ball? How?
Well, he's definitely not scared to dunk. I mean, why?
No, he was. He's not scared to dunk. He was afraid to get fouled from behind. That's why.
Yeah.
He was afraid to get fouled and not have the dunk go in and go to the line. That's it. Thanks for the call. That's all that was. Let's be clear. That's all that was. I don't want to go to the line and look bad again and really cost my team. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. How about Chris in Rockaway? Chris, what's going on? How are you, bud?
I'm doing well, and you just kind of triggered me of like Michael Scott when you saw Toby, when you heard that.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking about. It was the Michael Scott meme of when he finds out that Toby is back. That's 100% accurate.
That's incredible. I had a quick comment, and I know it's probably going to be talk for tomorrow, but I just wanted to shout out to Carl Nassib. Hopefully there's a day where I don't have to give this call, but the first NFL player to come out is gay. I'm a straight man, but it's always just good to see it because – I think it helps the kids out there, and it's just good overall. So shout him out, and that's it, and hopefully this is not a story in the future. Appreciate it.
Hey, Chris, thanks for the call. Carl Nassib, for those who don't know, is the defensive end for the Raiders, went to Penn State, and just a little while ago, I'd say within the last 2 to 3 hours, on Twitter came out with a video where he came out as gay and said, I've been wanting to do this for some time, but it's about time that I did it. And is donating $100,000 to the LGBTQ Suicide Prevention Foundation. I forget that. I believe it's Project Trevor or the Trevor Project. I'm not exactly sure of the name of it. But point being is congratulations and great job. Congratulations on having the guts to do it. And you're right. As he said, as many have said, you hope that this is a case where this is not a story coming in the future. Thought it was well done by Carl Nassib. Let us hit Danny on Long Island. Hello, Danny.
Chris, this evening I am Danny from New Jersey, as I am in your home state watching baseball, which is one thing. And then I visited the Raritan Flemington Diner. Are you familiar with this establishment?
I am familiar with the Raritan Flemington Diner. That's somewhat out near where I live, yes. Are you?
I grew up in
was
Long
a game
Island.
Today in Bridgewater? What do you got?
No, baseball had the Diamond Nation out here, but I grew up in the world of diners on Long Island, and what I saw paled in comparison to this diner. You could spend a week there, three meals a day, and never lose interest. Unbelievable.
There are some great diners in New Jersey. There really are. There are some bad ones, too. And when you get a bad one, there's, God. But there's some great diners. I'm glad you had a good experience.
It was a good experience. But listen, you know, we always talk about iconic moments, and we thought that Kevin Durant gave us an iconic moment with that shot. If his toenails were a little trimmed, it would have been a three-point, and he would have won. But unfortunately, 5 minutes later, he turned into Andy Chavez, which if you don't win the game, it's great. And he played honorably, but it kind of it'll meld into the ionosphere. And then we had the Islander defenseman making a save of all time with one second to go on the clock. And now we will see whether that will become iconic. If the Islanders were to go on and win the Stanley Cup, he will be remembered. I don't want to say like Bobby Knight would score a game winning, you know, but just it was a night where the remote control almost exploded in my hand, trying to get in touch with all of these games. And
Danny,
let me
ask you one small thing about it. With Durant in particular, do you have any sense that maybe even though they lost, because it's a couple of games and the way he did it, that maybe that helps his legacy even more just a bit?
Anybody who watched the series, and I'm a moderate basketball fan at best, knows that the only reason they lost was because of injuries. And not only when injuries, it's not only just having an injury, but when it happens, when you have everybody back finally and you blow the team out in game one and on the way in game two, and now in the middle of the series, you can see where game three, four, and five, they were stunned and they had to adjust. By game five, they kind of had their mojo back, not as best as they could. So it was a valiant effort. It definitely elevates his positioning in the NBA forever, but not in Brooklyn, New York, you know, because they're not going to win it because of this. But he's a standalone player for all time. His effort was phenomenal and will stand the test of time. But they did not win the game. So as far as like if he doesn't go on to win an NBA championship,
well,
for the Nets,
I know. Listen, thanks for the call, Danny. And listen, I get it. You're right. But I somehow actually came out of the game feeling even out of the series feeling even that much better about what Kevin Durant is. It was, as Bart suggested, it was LeBron dragging the Cavs to the finals a few years back. Dragging. 800-919-3776. A few minutes on the Nets. Going to get back to the calls in just one moment. But I really, beyond being super impressed with what Durant did and almost dragging them into the conference finals, I really am very curious about this offseason. I think the Nets learned one thing that's exceptionally important moving forward, and that is they may not be able to believe in Joe Harris as a postseason player, because in this series, he was absolutely awful. I don't think they're going to be able to move him easily by any stretch of the imagination, given the fact that he just signed a massive contract this past offseason. He led the league in three-point shooting, but God, he was terrible. And all the Nets have to be about is what you do in the playoffs. That's it. That's it. That's what they have to be about. And they have to be evaluating who is going to deliver when it matters the most. And if we're being honest, Joe Harris did not deliver when it mattered the most. Now, here's what is very curious. This offseason, the Nets can extend the big three. They are eligible to give all three four-year contract extensions. You want to fall out of your chair? Listen up. Here's where the numbers are. For James Harden, the contract extension would be for 4 years and $253 million. Did I stutter? 4 years, $253 million. Just to give you a quick math lesson, that is $63 million per year. for Kevin Durant. It is 4 years, $234.5 million on a max contract. That is $58.6 million per year. For Kyrie Irving, it is 4 years, $217.5 million. He is bringing up the rear at a paltry $54 million per year. Are you going to offer extensions to all three of those guys at max money? The Nets can afford to do it because they are more than happy to pay the luxury tax, clearly. And Josai, the owner, is worth $13 billion. Do you want to keep all three there for the next 5 years? Durant, Irving, Kyrie. At that insane amount of money. That's a big question to ask yourself this postseason, or this offseason, I should say. My guess probably is yes. I don't know that they all definitively signed for that, although I can't imagine why they would not. The only thing is, if they want to keep their options open, if they feel like they go win a championship next year, let's try to do it somewhere else. Boy, that is a remarkable number. And so I just want you to keep this in mind. Two words. Load management. For all three of those guys, even though Harden likes to play a ton, for all three of those guys, you have to assume that you're not going to have any of them for more than 60 games a season. And that number may be heavy. And listen, when it comes to trying to win a championship, you understand why that would be the case. Are you going to max out all those guys right now? You very well may. You very well may this offseason. And those are some absolutely absurd numbers. Who else are you going to be able to get that are going to be role players along with that? Look, the money, the tax bill, will be absurd. But if it comes to winning a championship, you know, that if that's what they care about are multiple championships, then that's what they're going to do. And I wouldn't blame them if they did. My other issue, though, is this. I continue to wonder how, at the end of the year, you can sit and feel like this about a team and know going forward, if you're Kevin Durant or you're Kyrie Irving, that no matter what, you're always going to be number two. You know, I do think that Durant has it in his head about wanting to be LeBron. And if you were to go to Madison Square Garden and actually lead that team to a championship, that would carry so much weight in your legacy about what you're about. Infinitely more than you'd ever do with Brooklyn. Next offseason, if they don't sign extensions, however that plays out this offseason, if all three can become free agents. Next offseason, could he end up with the Knicks? Yeah, could. If you were Durant, wouldn't you want to think about it? See, if I'm those guys, I still honestly believe that if you were to ask them today, as opposed to 2 years ago when they signed both Durant and Kyrie, that they would have signed with the Knicks if they knew what was going to happen with Worldwide West, with Leon Rose, that they would have signed with the Knicks. Thibodeau might have been a stumbling block, but I think ultimately, you know, if they had signed here, knowing that those two guys, meaning Worldwide West and Leon, were coming here, they might have been able to work with them a little bit on who the coach was going to be. Ultimately, folks, we have to remember one thing. The best talent on the floor is going to win out. That's all there is to it. The Nets had the best player on the floor. The Bucks had the most talent on the floor. Spike in St. Pete, next, 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Spike.
Good evening, my friend. Always good to talk to you, and you made a couple of great points as usual. One, I'm going to deviate on what I said originally. I want to get to basketball in a second, but real quick comment. I'm watching DeGrom, and the two guys in the outfield let a ball drop to take away a no-hitter. And the next guy up, the third baseman, almost dropped a pop-up on that left-handed, the big guy. Let me tell you, they're psyched out when DeGrom pitches. I think everybody tenses up, but he's a sheer joy to watch. He really is. He's in the Koufax league now to me. He's established.
Well, at the very least, Spike, now it's not as much of an issue with them scoring runs for him.
Right. Okay, one basketball comment. Games 5 and 7, you won't see better performance by an individual player. You just won't. And he was gassed, to say the least.
Yeah.
On that last play, I've watched it a half a dozen times, and I'm not redboarding, I'm not second-guessing, but I guess I am, because he could have gone right to the basket and gone for an and-one. If you look, he could have gone to the left. It was as wide open as the New Jersey Turnpike at 3 in the morning. But he made the decision. The shot before that. I don't know how you felt. I'll get off, and thanks for taking me. I'd like to hear your opinion, because I thought you didn't have a good angle at it, but boy, I would have bet that was a three and that would have been some fairy tale ending. What do you think?
I thought his foot was still on the line. I did, but it would have been a fairy tale ending. You're right. And thanks for the call, Spike, meaning the one in OT, I thought his foot was actually on the line too. But the one was the air ball, but nonetheless, just amazing what this guy did. Amazing. And that kind of performance in games 5 and 7 was just remarkable in every way. And I can't believe that this is the case, because I came into the postseason, and it's just a natural inclination with me. When you're a heavy favorite and you have 3 stars on one team, I'm likely going to root against you, because that's no fun. That's no fun. I don't want to see the guys who are supposed to win like that. But I have to admit, on Saturday, I was rooting hard for Durant to drag that team across the finish line. Rooting hard. That is the first time in my life, and it's nothing against him, but that I have actively rooted for Kevin Durant in a game. That's how blown away I was by what he was doing. It's time for the Truly Hard play of the game, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. That's Dominic Smith with a 3-run double. 3-run double that came in the bottom of the 5th inning. Mets 4-2 lead, top 7, as Edwin Diaz tries to close it out in the opener of this doubleheader against the Bravos. And, of course, Jacob DeGrom, 5 scoreless. He threw 70 pitches. 5 scoreless through 70 pitches. And let's just give you the full line on DeGrom. And that is, as I am searching and stalling, 5 innings, 1 hit. No runs, walk 2, struck out 6. Yep, that's your Truly Hard play of the game. Brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram of sugar, 5% alcohol, 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company. Please drink responsibly. Up next, let's hit Hector in Dover, New Jersey. Hector, what's going on, bud? You're on 98.7 ESPN. Good talk. Rob in Brooklyn is next, 98.7 ESPN. Rob, what's up?
Hey, Colin, how's it going? Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to get your opinion, before you gave us your take on the Nets. And part of what I wanted to ask you was, like, what direction do you see the Knicks going in? For via free agency or any type of trade, because I'm hearing a lot of stuff being talked about of like, oh, let's trade Julius Randle for Ben Simmons, or just absolutely insane ideas, in my opinion. because I think Julius Randle is actually a top 15-ish to 25 player in the league who we can build around. And clearly this past postseason you saw his flaws and weaknesses, but I also saw him having to take a lot of tough shots towards the end of the shot clocks because the rest of his teammates couldn't do anything with the ball. So,
now, look, I don't know what the numbers – yeah, my opinion is this. I don't know what the numbers are going to look like on this contract. But how do you feel about Spencer Dinwiddie?
I'm not crazy about. I mean, my opinion is I'm looking at the Nets, and I don't see why they're not going to sign three players to those
max
three
contracts.
Stars to max contracts and extensions. And if I'm the Knicks, I'm thinking, well, I have to be as good as the Nets, right? Otherwise, you're just going to sign. I've been reading like Dennis Schroeder for a 5-year, $100 million deal. Like, get out of here.
No, you're not doing that. Thanks for the call. Here's the thing, Rob. You're not doing that with Schroeder. I don't know what the numbers look like, and I know that he opted out of a $12.5 million deal with the Nets for next season because he thinks the number's going to look more like $20 million a year. If it's not coming together with other superstar players. I do not hate the idea of Spencer Dinwiddie as a point guard for the Knicks. I really don't. I mean, you could do much, 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 much worse. I think he's a really good player. And assuming he is 100% healthy, I love him in this situation. You want to talk about Randall? Okay. I think this could be the guy that's your point guard for the future. Now, what are we talking about? Is it a 3-year, $60 million deal? I would do that. I would do that without blinking. I really would. I think it'd be a great fit for them. This is if some of the other bigger names are not necessarily working out, but I would absolutely do that. Just want to make one observation. One thing that you are seeing in this Mets game is that some of the pitchers are having trouble controlling the baseball. Now, I don't think Edwin Diaz in a 4-2 game in the seventh inning of a 7-inning game in a doubleheader is throwing at a batter, but he just had a fastball get away from him on the inside. Nito got hit in the right forearm earlier, and there was another pitch, and I forget, I think it was from Lugo, that got away from him that sailed up and in on a player, not at the head, but at the arms. And you can, as I'm watching, the Mets just won the game, and I'm watching Diaz and McCann talking right now, and McCann's making a gesture with his hand like the ball really tailing off on his fastball. This is what we're talking about with the sticky stuff. And they're checking all of them. I get it. That's fine. But I'll tell you what, like if that's going to be the problem moving forward, it's going to get scary quick. It's going to get very scary quick. 800-919-3776. Right now, I want to remind you the Islanders are home for the semifinal round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you have the chance to score tickets to Game 6 Wednesday night. Visit NewYorkIslanders.com/ESPN to fill out an entry form and get ready to bring the noise to cheer on the Isles. All entries must be received by noon tomorrow, so you must enter soon. Again, visit NewYorkIslanders.com/ESPN for your chance to win. Joe, out in California, next, 98.7 ESPN. Joe.
What's up? Hey, first-time caller. I just want to say I am pissed off at the Nets. I'm from California, but I did have money line with the Nets on my parlay. I went 5 out of 6.
That's a killer. How much would you have taken in?
Trust me, I'm still kind of like dead inside, but it's okay.
How much?
It was only $20 for 1,100. So
yeah, $1,100 is $1,100, cowboy. I mean, let's not sneeze at that.
Just don't rub it in my face. I'm not.
That's a kick in the pants.
I know. I'm joking with you. It's all love. But with the Nets, I'll say. It was unfortunate with Kyrie Irving's sprained ankle. I wouldn't even say that the condensed season was a reason for that. I just felt like he stepped on somebody's ankle on accident, and it's just tough luck.
Yeah, no, I think, thanks for the call. I don't think it had anything to do with LeBron and what he was talking about and whining about that either. Absolutely not. That was just a freak accident type of injury. You want to talk about a hamstring, that's fine. Maybe that had more to do with the fact that James Harden wasn't in shape this season. We consider that? I think we should. All right, that does it for me. Great job. Michael Aleshmagoon and Brian Mongia. Carlin, out.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.